Welcome to VOA's Campus Connection. I'm David Byrd.
And I'm Lin Young.
This week, we continue our look at alcohol use and abuse on campus with some advice on what to do if you or someone you know has a problem.
So you want to have alternate senses of belonging, alternate sources of belonging. And that can be facilitated by parents, it can be facilitated by peers, it can be facilitated by mentors at the college and university.
The SAT and ACT are necessary for many schools in the United States, but how do you prepare?
We'll visit the Parsons School of Design in New York City.
How do you adjust to a new culture and a new language when you come to the U.S. for school?
And we'll hear how international students here in the Washington area deal with anxiety.
That's all coming up on this week's Campus Connection.
In our last show, we talked about alcohol use and abuse on U.S. college campuses.
Many of our experts say while so-called binge drinking is declining somewhat, drug and alcohol use remain serious problems.
This week, we want to look at what to do if you or someone you know has a drinking problem.
Dr. George Koop of the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism says there are some telltale signs that you might be drinking too much.
You're drinking more than you wanted to. You can't cut down, or you try to cut down, but it doesn't work. You get into situations where you could get hurt after you've been drinking. Maybe you had an accident with the car, or maybe you actually had a DUI. You keep drinking more to get the same effect. We call that tolerance. You keep having excruciating hangovers, which get worse and worse. That's withdrawal. Maybe you just spend a lot of time drinking. You have a roommate who seems to be drinking all the time. And then interpersonal relationships are often the first thing to go. So, you know, people start to shun you because you're in that drinking culture, and so you're only hanging out with people that drink, and you get the picture.
Nikki Nance of Beacon College in Florida says, don't be afraid to let others know that you or your roommate or friend has a drinking problem.
Most colleges are going to have, for students living on campus, they're going to have resident advisors of some kind that they need to be really versed in. Just paying attention to those kinds of dynamics. If somebody comes and says, my roommate's drunk and, you know, it's kind of bothering me and what can I do about this, then that should throw a red flag up about the other student as well.
Dr. Luis Profeta, an emergency physician at St. Vincent's Hospital in Indianapolis, Indiana, says to not try to handle a drug or alcohol problem alone, get professional help.
These are very complex psychodynamic issues, sociological issues, drug and alcohol addiction problems need to be addressed by healthcare professionals. And, you know, what we tell them is just simply, hey, bring them into the ER. Bring them to us. Let us, find them the resources. Let us steer them the right directions. I think another thing is that everybody's so worried about getting somebody, quote, in trouble, end quote, that they tend to ignore this stuff, and they can end up killing them that way.
Dr. George Koop says that parents can also play a big role by helping their students avoid isolation, which can lead to overuse of alcohol as students try to fit in.
Make sure in your teen or your young person is actually engaged in other activities in college, that, you know, is fulfilled and has a sense of belonging. And that's one of the biggest problems I would imagine for foreign students coming over to the United States is we are social beings, and the biggest, most powerful reinforcer that anybody or reward that everybody feels is being approval from other human beings. And so if the only way you get that approval is by hanging out with a drinking crowd, you know, you're going to be in deep trouble. So you want to have alternate senses of belonging, alternate sources of belonging. And that can be facilitated by parents, it can be facilitated by peers, it can be facilitated by mentors at the college and university.
Lisa Schrader of Middle Tennessee State University said by Skype that open communication between students and parents before they come to school can help avoid problems.
So we encourage all parents, particularly in that summer prior to enrollment, to have an open conversation with their students about what they expect regarding substance use, kind of what their hopes would be. If they're open to discussing their own experiences with it, that can be a helpful talking piece just so the student knows that it's a safe environment, but that there is some level of communication and the student knows that they can go to their parents if they have questions later.
Nikki Nance of Beacon College says that everyone can play a role in helping prevent alcohol abuse. Parents, peers, mentors, and even people in the town where a college is located.
Dr. Luis Profeta says people around someone with an alcohol or drug problem can't be afraid to reach out to help.
You're not covered under the same sort of privacy issues as we as healthcare providers are. So if I had a friend that was in need, I'd just call their parents and tell them, hey, I'm worried about your son, I'm worried about your daughter. But we need brave people to step up and do that kind of stuff here.
There are many resources available, including one called College AIM, which is put out by the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism.
Many of our guests said that keeping lines of communication open is vital to helping someone who has a drug or alcohol problem.
We invite your comments on this subject. Be sure to leave them on our Facebook page, VOA Asia. Thanks for joining us for VOA's Campus Connection.
The College Board is a not-for-profit organization founded in 1900 that helps prepare students for the transition to college through the SAT test and the Advanced Placement Program.
The board says that in 2017, more than 1.8 million students took the SAT.
But there are some who think the SAT is not a good measurement of whether a student is ready for college or not.
A new documentary, The Test and the Art of Thinking, looks at the strengths and the drawbacks of the SAT.
The film looks at the challenges faced by both American and international students in taking standardized tests.
Michael Arlen Davis is the film's director. He says that he worked on the project when his own children were taking the SAT.
I undertook this project as a parent. I'm not an educational professional, and I'm not a testing professional. So I wandered into this territory as someone who was watching their own children go through the test and was just got very curious about the nature of it and the history.
David says that the SAT and another admission exam, the ACT, are unique in the world, and many international students are not familiar with that kind of test.
Davis says that that has led to the growth of a cottage industry of test preparation.
Some tutors who established overseas offices because they encounter students who have never seen anything like the SAT or the ACT. And that tutoring is even more important if you're overseas than if you are in the U.S. because its style has I think the tests actually have a certain language, almost a code. And I think that's what the tutors impart to your students, is the code of the test. And if you're overseas, you probably need that even more than a student in the U.S. You probably would be less familiar with the code of these particular tests, would be my guess.
Sohini Mukherjee is a high school student in West Bengal, India. She said by Skype that she realized she was not ready for the SAT after taking it the first time.
I was really, really happy with the math section and the writing and language section that SAT has. But that reading section is something that I wasn't really happy about. Like, you will ask students over here and they're like, okay, the reading section? Yeah, it's like, you know, catching a train, like 52 questions in 60 minutes. And it's really, I think it's the most challenging part of the entire SAT, if you would ask me.
Sohini said she had to learn how to do English analysis for the reading section, and she needed to learn some things that she had never been taught in Indian schools.
Like, we know the basics of it, of course. We know what analysis is, but the core part of it, we are not taught. So you can understand, like, learning analysis by myself, it was really tough for me. So the reading went completely jumbled. Math was more kind of my thing. So it was cool. So yeah, my SAT overall didn't represent me as a student. I think my essays were more efficient than that.
Hafiz Lakhani has the unique distinction of having scored perfectly on both the SAT and the ACT. Now he runs a company that coaches pre-college and college students not only on taking the tests, but also on navigating college life.
Hafiz said by Skype that students need to understand it would take time to learn how to take the standardized tests.
Like any skill, we need to build the foundations, right? So if we're talking about skiing, we're talking about stance, we're talking about position of your skis, etc., right? And then from there, we're putting in the practice. So in this way, you know, it can be really daunting for a student who maybe has had a lot of excellence, a lot of success in academics by that memorization style. And this often applies, honestly, to U.S. students too, where they're good in school because they're always like, okay, the teacher wants me to learn these facts, I'll learn these facts, and I'm prepared for the test.
Lakhani says that students will have to be patient with themselves and they will eventually master the skills needed to succeed.
So it's just a matter of, like any skill, right? The first phase of it is uncomfortable, really uncomfortable. But I often show students, look, when you're improving on SAT or ACT, think of it like an S curve, right? So the beginning of your work is the bottom of the S. It's flat. It's very flat, right? And then it starts to really get steeper, right? And the steepness comes from when the improvement starts to really come more quickly once you sort of get your bearings, right? Once you are past the discomfort and you're saying, oh, okay, I know the formulas, like, but that the formulas are really basic on the ACT and SAT. Just a matter of getting into the repetition of the skills, and the confidence comes very quickly after a while.
Pamela Donnelly is the author of The Four Keys to College Admission Success.
She says SAT scores are not the only thing colleges look at, so students have to be sure they want to study in the U.S.
What they need to be doing is beginning to understand that the colleges that they're thinking of applying to are going to be very, very interested in their ability to think creatively and their ability to problem solve in ways that are not just linear. And that if they really feel that this is a cultural fit for them to come to the U.S. and to study, that they want to be asking themselves, is this a right fit for me if I'm entirely only comfortable with what you're describing as a more authoritarian way of approaching their studies?
Some schools here in the United States have decided not to require the SAT or to not give it as much weight as it used to have.
Documentary director Michael Arlen Davis says these schools believe the test is not a complete picture of their applicants.
A number of colleges and universities have made the determination it's not providing them enough, and that's limiting their applicant pool, that there are certain communities that are damaged by the test or not fairly represented by the test, that it skews in a certain way. But we estimate there are about 220 colleges that have decided, based on their own data, internal data, that they're allowing students to apply submitting a test or not submitting a test, and they're able to make decisions, admissions decisions, based on that.
So we'd love to hear your opinion about this subject. Have you taken the SAT or the ACT? Were you prepared?
Let us know by visiting our webpage, VOA Asia.
This is VOA's Campus Connection. Now, Lynn, did you find it difficult to adjust to the American culture when you came here for grad school?
Oh, definitely. It's a very big challenge for me.
Now, what was the hardest part?
I guess it's the culture part. My English was okay when I, you know, come here. But
yes.
It's more about what people are talking about. You know, a movie that I've never seen, a song that I've never heard, and they're talking and singing along. I'm just like in the clouds and I don't know what's happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm too ashamed to ask every time.
Really?
Because it's, you know, you don't want to stop people and ask what is this about every single time.
No, but I mean, you know, it's kind of like, well, you're not from here. If I went to China, mm-hmm. I'd be completely lost.
Yeah, but I mean, it's intimidating. I think in the United States, people have the assumption that you should be able to speak English and you should understand our culture when you're here. Mm. They're willing to explain it to you, but I feel intimidated to ask every time.
Mm. Well, adjusting to a new culture, a new environment, or even a new language can be overwhelming, but there are some things that you can do.
Anne Caruo is the Director of International Admissions at Boston University. She says one thing to help your English proficiency is to room with a native speaker.
Even though it's tempting to room with someone you know and someone who's like you, really try to push the envelope and maybe not room with that person you've known since grade school who speaks your language, because that temptation is so great. You know, I've lived overseas. I get that. You know, we all want to go migrate to what's familiar, but push yourself, because I think if you have a roommate who is maybe a native speaker and you're not, it's going to make you grow in that English proficiency so much faster.
Anne also told us by Skype that consuming popular culture like movies, TV, and especially music can help with language skills.
You know, looking at films, listening to anything, music, I find a great vehicle for learning pop culture, and of course, social media. We know what are students sort of talking about on those channels.
And Caruo says, adjusting to your new environment is partially your responsibility, but the payoffs can help your entire college career.
I would say just keep reaching out and connecting with students who are not like you. Join clubs where you might see different types of students. There are also classes that I teach, one section of which is called like a first-year experience class. Many schools offer them, but you can elect to take it, so it's not a requirement. I feel like that's a great place to engage with lots of differences. And also, you know, it's typically a one-credit class where you learn sort of to navigate the landscape of the university. We're a large urban university, so I think it's particularly helpful for us. And so students, I think it greatly helps them transition in a myriad of ways.
Anne's advice to students is to also reach out to your classmates or your peers if you need help.
You know, what's really interesting, I think what I've learned is that our domestic students are just as eager to connect with international students as international students are connect. But I think sometimes, like you said, the bubble happens and they don't mix. But when they do, just great things happen.
And says that students should not worry about getting things wrong or feeling awkward in a new culture. She says there are people and resources to help you navigate life in the U.S. And she encourages international students to make the most of them.
You can tell us your stories about adapting to the U.S. college scene. Post them on our Facebook page, VOA Asia. Listening to VOA's Campus Connection. The Parsons School of Design in Lower Manhattan is widely regarded as one of the world's best art and design schools.
The school was founded in 1896 by American Impressionist painter William Merritt Chase, who was in search of individualistic artistic expression.
It was the first of its kind in the country to offer programs in fashion design, advertising, interior design, and graphic design.
Some of his notable graduates include designer Donald Karen, Mark Jacobs, Alexander Wang, Tom Ford, Jason Wu, and Isaac Mizrahi.
Artists Jasper Johns, Roy Lichtenstein, Norman Rockwell, and Ai Weiwei also attended Parsons.
VOA Mandarin Service reporter Chu Wu visited the campus and has this profile.
Making Center, Wood Shop, Laser Cutting Lab, Specialty Sewing Studio, and Graphic Lab. All of the above are part of the education students receive at Parsons School of Design, a department of the new school located in the heart of Manhattan, New York City. Some of these locations and resources are available for students 24 hours as they work on all kinds of models and materials day and night. Regarded widely around the world as one of the most prestigious art and design schools, Parsons provides its students with not only resources and opportunities, but also challenges. Product design student Jasmine agrees.
I think it's definitely a challenge, but I think with it, it pushes you to your limits in a good way, kind of forcing you to be creative and be resourceful.
Industrial design graduate student Yu Zheng comes from China. She explains how she improves her practical skills thanks to all the do-it-yourself projects at Parsons.
There are many labs here. I'm always making something here. Back in China, my study was more leaning towards modeling and sketching. But here, they want you to actually create the model to make it realizable. What's interesting is that we have something called a modeling company in China. You can design your product and send it to these companies for them to build it. But you make it from scratch all by yourself here.
Being practical is exactly what attracts Jen to Parsons. Many programs at Parsons expect students to start designing and making products from the first day they step on this campus. Instead of essays, the curriculum here is more about training students' capability of making and presenting a product. Integrated design student Elias took a class where students cooperated with companies directly.
We created, we partnered with a company. Parsons has these classes called Co-Labs, where they'll work with an existing company for a semester, like a class will work with them. And so we sort of redesigned classic children's novels. So it's like you can take a class and actually make something that will exist.
It can be stressful to study at Parsons. Students say they spend most of their spare time in the labs. However, as Elias put it, they are very passionate about what they do, so pressure becomes motivation. On the other hand, Parsons is also trying hard to provide support so that students can stimulate their inspiration and creativity freely. And that includes its expanded network.
And like the connections the school has, they'll invite people in the industry to come look at students' final work. And usually they're displayed for like a week, and it's a really busy week, so there's people in and out all the time. Really good exposure. And it's all majors, not just the fashion.
Parsons believe that with all these opportunities to practice what they have learned, students will connect with the industries in a better way. For VOA's Campus Connection, this is Chu Wu, VOA News.
Greta Garbo and Monroe, Dietrich and DiMaggio, Marlon Brando, Jimmy Dean, on the cover of a magazine, Grace Kelly, Harlow Jean, picture of a beauty queen. Gene Kelly, Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, Dance on Air. They had style, they had grace. Rita Hayworth gave good face. Lauren Catherine Manitou, Betty Davis, we love you. Ladies with an attitude, fellas that were in the mood. Don't just stand there, let's get to it. Strike a pose, there's nothing to it.
Thanks for joining us for VOA's Campus Connection.
So, David, how did you deal with anxiety when you were in college?
You mean like getting ready for a test or something?
I guess, yeah.
Okay, well, if it was over a test, the biggest thing that helped me was studying with other students. Because when you're in class with people, they hear things that you don't hear. And, or what we did, now this was smart. We were able-bodied, smart young men. We would, the professor would give like four or five books for the class, right? And so we would go, okay, Tom, you read that book and know everything about it.
And write a summary.
Richard, you read this book and know everything about it, and I'll read this one. And then you would teach one another
about
the material.
That's really smart,
and
actually.
And we did some crams that way. But mostly, if I was flowing solo, it was just kind of, you know, suck it up, buttercup.
Yeah.
Time to go get ready.
But that's a very good strategy because there are a lot of things to read in American schools.
Yeah, well, you know, we wanted to find out how some local students deal with anxiety. So we sent Sana Ali and Tim Lee to some local campuses.
My name is Gloria Han. I am from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I study international affairs and economics. Well, I'm a planner, so I create a very rigid schedule for myself. But other than that, I've been pretty good at handling stress throughout my life, so it hasn't really been an issue. Obviously, there are cramming sessions and things like that, but I just try to keep a level head and stay calm. Talk to friends for support, you know.
My name is Jay, and I'm a law school student from China.
Actually, my background is similar as him. My name is Lan Xing. I'm also a law student in GW in international and comparative law.
I would go jogging or just play some video games to reduce my pressure.
I go to gym and work out or do some just cycling around the DC. Potomac River is very beautiful.
Hi, I'm Brian Kim. I'm studying international affairs. I'm from Seattle. I try to do it like step by step, like organize my plan first and get some priority first and then start like before getting everything done at the one last minute. Yeah.
I'm Tracy. I'm from Texas and I'm studying international affairs. It depends on what kind of anxiety I'm feeling. Normally I just read a book or watch a TV show, something to take my mind off of the stress I'm feeling necessarily. Other times, if I'm around friends, I just try to talk to them, hang out, go get lunch.
I'm Darren Wan. I am from San Francisco, California, and I am also studying international affairs. I did take a meditation course, 1 credit, to start getting back into meditating to try to keep the stress at a minimum, and that has seemed to help. So I think I will continue to meditate.
My name is Yolanda. I'm the freshman at GW. My major is biology. I'm from Canada. During like exam time, I usually like watching like movies or like dramas to relax myself a little bit. Also, like I go out, hang out with my friend a little bit just for like relaxing because like exam studying is like busy work.
My name is Tim Lee. I go to American University, majoring in broadcast journalism. I'm a senior. I'm from China. Actually, I'm taking a class called Stress Management this semester, and we have learned like a bunch of different measures to relieve our pressures and stress, like including meditating or even just breathe with certain rhythm and think about certain stuff, certain pictures in your mind. Like, it's just gonna help you to calm yourself down. And if I feel like really stressed, I'll also go to the gym and just play basketball, because I got so focused and being so competitive on the court, I can just forget anything else and everything that burned on my shoulder.
So, what's your opinion? You can let us know how you deal with anxiety by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
You might even hear your story on our show.
Thanks for being with us for this edition of VOA's Campus Connection.
If you have any questions or comments on our show, visit our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
Thanks to our guests this week, Dr. Louis Profeta, Dr. George Kube, Nikki Nance, Lisa Schrader. Hafiz Lakhani, Pamela Donnelly, and Ann Corvo.
Thanks also to our interns, Zana Ali, Zach Marcus, Nick Sobo, Yellen Jun, and Tim Lee.
Thanks to correspondent Esha Sarai for her help on the SAT story, and thanks to our engineer, Suleiman Tarawali.
The managing editor of VOA Asia is Diane Gao.
I'm David Berg.
And I'm Lin Yang. Join us again for another edition of VOA's Campus Connection.